Since we're talking about problems we run into, specifically problems related to measurement, let's talk about range restriction. When the variability of a predictor or criterion variable in the sample, so variable in the sample, is less than the variability of the construct in the population, the consequence is that the potential correlation between that variable and others will be less than one. If you have range restriction, you can't have a perfect correlation. If you don't represent all the variability, you can't have a perfect correlation. Things bunch up, and as soon as they bunch up, there's prediction error, correlation is less than one. Does that make sense? Okay, as soon as they bunch, now multiple different y scores for each x score, you don't have perfect prediction anymore. Two major sources are, one, the sample doesn't represent the population of interest. Selection research, classic example. Our target population is applicants, and what we really should do is give the test to all applicants, then give all applicants a job for 6 months, and then we've got good performance data, we correlate them, and we find out how well the instrument does. For some reason, the client won't let us hire everybody who walks through the door. So what do? We use whatever selection instrument is in place, which probably doesn't suck because the business is in business, right? They haven't failed. Now we've got range restriction. And we have less variability in the sample than we would have in the target population, and we underestimate the validity of the prediction. Analog research is also like this. There's a lot of things we do where we ask normal people, I shouldn't say we ask normal people. We present normal people with the stimuli and the tasks instead of a target population that's usually at one extreme or the other. And analog research sort of waxes and wanes over time. I think when I wrote this slide, we were looking at, we'd had a couple of candidates come in who were all talking about looking at eating disorders. They all presented wonderful data except for one itsy bitsy tiny thing. None of their studies were conducted on people with eating disorders. The assumption was that if people without eating disorders show these relationships between food choices and other things, that the ones with eating disorders would show it to a greater extent. Turns out it didn't work out well, but that's where they were going at the time. And so you get normal eaters had a much narrower range of variability in the choices they made than if you include normal people and folks with eating disorders on both ends of normal. Yeah. Make sense? So we're looking here. I mean, in essence, let's pretend for a second that there is a nice correlation and we're looking here. Well, that's a weaker correlation than the whole thing. So is if we look at the top end or at the bottom end. The other thing is if there's a poor fit between the sample and the measure. These are what is known as ceiling effects or floor effects, because usually you screw up at one end or the other. For example, if we use the MMPI with all just normal folks, you get a range from about 50 in the middle up to about 62 down to about 48, and the cutoff for clinically interesting is 70. Lets you know that we're building this thing for a range, and this is what got Walmart in trouble. Walmart used a wacko finder to screen employees. And they weren't doing it to screen out potentially dangerous people. They were using it to identify good workers. Doesn't work, not legal, they paid for it. Another one is to use the Beck Depression Inventory with inpatients. Now, the new BDI has actually been adjusted so that it covers a broader range. When the first BDI came out, it was designed as a research instrument with college students. Okay? And you got a good range of scores just from college students. And so if you give this instrument that has a nice range of score for college students to people who are really depressed, everybody has a 42. Make sense? Well, the easiest way to think about this, I think, is a ceiling effect. A ceiling effect is what happens if we all walk into Maggie's playhouse. Maggie's is tall. Her playhouse is this tall. And if we walk into Maggie's playhouse, that's the tallest any of us can be measured to be. That's what a ceiling effect means. No matter how tall you really are, there's a measurement ceiling there. You with me? And so what happens if you give college students a fourth grade math test? A ceiling effect. Most of them score high, and most of them don't have a score that reflects how much math they know. Ceiling effect? Ceiling effect is what happens when you give fourth graders a college math test. You can only get as low as zero. And how much you don't know isn't reflected in a zero. Make sense? That's what's meant by floor and ceiling effects. And what we really have to worry about is that if we have range restriction by sampling, by misrepresentation, or by a poor fit between the sample and the measure, we still are underestimating the correlation between those variables. That's the problem with range restriction in all of its forms. We're underestimating the population correlation with the sample statistic. So what happens? If the criterion is range restricted, the strength of the model will be underestimated and good predictors will be missed. If all the predictors are equally range restricted, you get the same problem for a different reason. Our real crisis is our desperate need to ask the question, which predictors are more important? Or even to ask the more direct statistical question, which ones do and which ones don't contribute. That's the safer question. We blow by that to get to, yeah, but what's really important? Okay. The real problem, huge and almost impossible to avoid in a single study, just so you know what the answer is going to be, differential range restriction among the predictors. If your measure of anxiety is pretty good, and your range of variability on anxiety is pretty good, but your depression measure is range restricted, and so your variability on depression isn't very good, and you put those two variables in as predictors, one of which is range restricted, one of which isn't, guess which one's going to look better, more important, maybe even as if it were the only thing that mattered. You with me? Range-restricted variables are at a disadvantage in a multiple regression because their utility is being underestimated. So the relative importance of predictors as single predictors and as contributors to multiple regression models will be misrepresented in the sample. This is a concern over which will be why we don't just inspect regression weight, beta weights to determine which predictors are more important. Why we're going to be very careful when we do that. Why we need big differences and still don't get too carried away. You want to argue that this variable is really, really important? Start running nested models. Start peeling other things out and show that when this one's left, it's still good. Okay? Don't just look. You still have range restriction problems, but they're not as bad as when you just lump everything in with all this differential range restriction and then start pointing fingers. Again, our only solution to this is convergent research. If when you run 8 different mixes of what depression and what anxiety measures, depression keeps coming up as important, anxiety keeps coming up as not important, you now develop some confidence. Does that make sense? That's why this whole construct validity thing is going to become really important the more of this we do.